listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Hello, I'm Natalie Key, Knowledge Exchange Manager for AHDB Horticulture, and I manage the GrowSave project, which has the goal of helping growers save and use energy more efficiently. Of course, emissions and carbon output and how this ties in with net zero are key considerations in energy management. So during this podcast, we're going to discuss the topic of net zero and what it means for horticultural production. To talk on this subject, I'm joined by John Swain, Technical Director at NFU Energy, who leads the GrowSave project for us, and Erin Rusbridge, a project manager at NFU Energy as well. We also have Rebecca Fry, Development Manager at Neem Lee, an ornamentals growing business, and Georgia Whitehouse, a geography student at Leeds University specialising in carbon emissions, who has been working with Neem Lee to calculate the carbon footprint of the business. So to start us off, John, could you provide a brief overview of what net zero is and the goals that have been set to reach this target in the UK?
Thank you, Natalie. As Natalie said, I'm John Swain, Technical Director at NFU Energy. So net zero, it's a buzzword that we've all been hearing quite a lot about recently, but it is specifically related to carbon emissions and how we might think about the emissions of carbon related to our businesses and the activities that we carry out. The net zero words are about reducing our carbon emissions to the point where the emissions that we are creating and the actions that we're taking to offset those emissions are in balance. So effectively, we have zero emissions by taking actions to both reduce and then to soak up carbon in the alternate manner. It's very different, I suppose, from gross zero, which would be to reduce our emissions completely to zero. And the reason that we all have targets set around reducing emissions to net zero is that in reality, achieving gross zero would be very, very difficult to achieve in a commercial organisation, in a commercial business. The number of targets that have been set vary depending on who you are. The UK itself has set a target of net zero by 2050. The NFU, particularly for agriculture, in which horticulture is included, has set a target that we should achieve net zero by 2040. And then various sort of individual commercial organisations have also set themselves targets to achieve net zero by a particular point. And in some cases, that could be 2040. In some instances, there are retailers who are thinking about reducing some of their carbon emissions to net zero by 2030. And it's almost, in a way, some people are trying to outdo themselves using carbon emissions and net zero as a way of showing how good they are for the environment and how sustainable their businesses are. But we should look beyond some of that sometimes and think about actually what is it that we're trying to achieve. Ultimately, we're trying to mitigate the effects of climate change. And one of the key attributes that cause climate change is carbon. And by reducing our carbon emissions, whether we set ourselves highly ambitious targets or maybe not even at all ambitious targets, any actions that we can take to reduce our carbon emissions will have a beneficial effect on our climate.
Thank you, John. So specifically for the horticultural production industry, what does the goal of net zero actually mean?
The goal of net zero in horticulture means taking actions, practically taking actions to reduce the emissions that we have. The first steps of that can be many and various for depending on where you are currently in your journey as a business. And I'm sure we will hear from Neem Lee about that as this podcast goes on. But clearly, in order to know what you're going to have to reduce by, the quantity of carbon that you've got to reduce by, you need to work out how much carbon you're currently emitting. So for many, the first step is to identify what their carbon emissions are currently and then work out the various sources of those carbon emissions and whether they're easy or hard to reduce those particular sources of emissions and then start to take actions to do so.
From your perspective, Rebecca, at Neem Lee, have the goals for net zero started affecting how you operate? And was this part of the business's motivation in the decision to carry out the carbon auditing work with Georgia?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of been on our agenda for a number of years now in terms of kind of being very conscious of how we operate and making sure that's as environmentally friendly as possible. As you may or may not know, pretty much all of our sites are almost solely heated by biomass boilers now. So we've kind of taken a lot of steps already. However, we've now identified the fact that we now need to quantify that, which has obviously led to us doing this piece of work with Georgia to kind of take step one and two of the steps that John lined out earlier in the podcast about journeying towards net zero. So yeah, absolutely, that is our goal. Now, we appreciate that there is a journey there, and the motivations behind that are multiple, really. So, you know, we work with a lot of major retailers, for example, Tesco, who have said, you know, they want to be at net zero by 2035, bringing that forward from 2050 earlier last year. So there's a lot more traction in the sort of wider retail industry, of which we are a part of. So it's important from that aspect, but also it's important for us as a business. Our environmental footprint remains key to us. So yeah, it's we appreciate it's going to be a journey, and I think anybody's kind of foolish to think that it's not going to be a journey. But yeah, we're sort of taking active steps now to sort of make that journey towards net zero.
That all sounds really proactive, and clearly why you started working with Georgia. So how did that come about? Did you approach her, or was there a project going on at the university?
Yeah, so there's a module at the university of which we applied to have a student, which we're very lucky to be allocated Georgia, who's got already a lot of experience in her short career in this area and has worked on similar projects with the business before. So yeah, comes with a lot of really relevant experience. She's really been an integral part of the team.
Thank you. So Georgia, how have you found an approach to carbon auditing that works for Neemly?
Thank you, Natalie. So I'll just take you through some of the steps that we've been through so far. We're about midway through at the moment. So firstly, introduced to Rebecca and the team, and I just wanted to find out about the context of the business. So this is why they were looking to calculate their footprint, what they were hoping to achieve, understanding more about their operations and supply chain, and also in terms of what they were already doing in terms of sustainability, what environmental metrics were they tracking, and how can we quantify the good things they're already doing? Then I began to review existing tools. We found that most tools had good elements involved with them, for example, the farm carbon calculator, but none really fit Neemly. So we decided to create our own calculator, which was tailored to Bridge Farm. So I then did some research about standards and certifications to do with carbon footprinting, and we found that the greenhouse gas protocol underlies most of them. So we used this as a basic methodology for auditing. And then if Neemly wish to pursue any standards in the future, they can use this as a basis for that. I then created the template of the calculator, drawing on the greenhouse gas protocol, the farm carbon calculator, and also DEFRA conversion factors. We then worked out a timing plan for bringing all the data together. And then as the data comes through to me, I'm entering it into the calculator and performing simplistic calculations about the annual quantity of the substance used, be that a fuel or a material, and then multiplying it by a conversion factor, and then I get a kilogram CO2 equivalent, and that will form the basis of the carbon footprint.
Really interesting to hear how you've gone about managing that for Neemly. Obviously, you said that the tool model that you developed has been tailored to them, but is it feasible that this could be rolled out for wider horticultural businesses to use?
Absolutely. The tool is based on the greenhouse gas protocol, which can be used by any business. I've refined it for Bridge Farms activities, but this also applies to horticulture. But I've been keen to make it quite broad. So if there are changes to Bridge Farms and Neemly's business activities, then the calculator can be used to quantify those as well.
I'll just step in and ask a question then, Georgia. Of your carbon footprint, as you call it. Clearly, the definition of carbon footprint encompasses almost like full life cycle analysis, to use another buzzword, by quantifying emissions from the very beginning of a product or a business life cycle through to the very end. How do you go about drawing the appropriate boundaries for the Neemly activities? And at what point did you get to you say, actually, I just cannot get any further information about these particular levels of activities, and I can't go any further than this point here, and therefore set an appropriate boundary to end the calculation?
We're kind of doing it as we go along and discovering where these boundaries lie and where the limits for the data are. So, for example, with agrochemicals, in an ideal world, I would have loved to be able to quantify each chemical and their emissions and allow Bridge Farm to be able to see which chemicals have the greatest or least environmental impact. However, when I was doing my research, I found that there was little data available for me to be able to do that. So that kind of, we came to a natural barrier where we couldn't do that given the data that's available at the moment.
We see this as an opportunity to work with a lot of suppliers in the industry. So whilst we might not be in a position in the next year to share this tool widen our business just while we refine it, I think that what we are hoping is going to be a big output for the industry of this process is that it was quite a big supplier within the industry. Obviously, you know, we work with a lot of the key suppliers. The list is endless. And I think that this will hopefully allow us to identify, you know, which parts of our internal supply chain are having the biggest impact on our carbon footprints. And therefore, that can help us to prioritise which suppliers we work with, which ones we're going to work with first. Because like you say, you know, and like Georgia said as well, it is really tricky. If our suppliers haven't done that piece of work themselves, then it's going to be really hard for us to get an accurate picture at this stage of, you know, the carbon footprint of a pot or a tray, for example. But we are hoping that we can focus our efforts as we progress. The hope being that other sort of businesses within the horticultural sector also use those suppliers. So it should have a really positive knock-on impact across the industry.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to hear. I suppose when I think about carbon footprinting, I quite often hear sort of three reasons for doing it. Yeah, business sustainability, a business decision support tool to make sure that you're making the right choices, and as a marketing tool. Do any of those dominate your requirement for this, Rebecca, or would you say each have equal weighting?
I think the first two definitely probably outweigh the marketing side of things. I think for us, you know, we are a very environmentally focused business. We have been for a number of years through our investment that we've put into Horseshoe Road site and also our sort of new development at Clay Lake. We've had to spend a lot of money and make a lot of investments to invest in the biomass boilers, invest in the rainwater harvesting, to take those steps towards, you know, what we believe is a positive journey towards net zero. Now, yeah, of course, the marketing element is important. We're about to begin a journey to direct-to-consumer supply. So obviously, we want to be able to communicate these positive messages with our consumers, because we want to kind of help guide them and help the consumers make a decision when they purchase a product. Because I think from a consumer perspective, we've noticed, you know, it's really becoming a really important decision factor when people purchase certain products, especially within certain audiences. So I think as it becomes over the next 5 to 10 years, I can really see the price of a product being listed, but also the carbon footprint of that product. And I think people are going to change how they shop quite significantly as the journey towards net zero becomes a key factor. But yeah, I would say primarily for us as a business, the first two of the points that you outlined are important for us. And as we continue to invest, as we continue to grow, we want to make sure that we're making the right decisions for both us as a business and also the planet.
So Erin, considering George's approach at Neemley, how do you recommend different businesses start to set the scope of their carbon assessment?
Thank you, Natalie. I'm Erin. I'm a project engineer at NSU Energy. I've been sort of specialising in carbon accounting calculation for sort of the last 18 months. So it's interesting to hear what Rebecca and Georgia have been, how they've been approaching their boundaries, setting those. Often what I've seen is that the sort of predominant driving factor for people, at least coming to us for our carbon accounting services, they're predominantly obligation based. So whether that's a government obligation scheme or whether that's they're part of a supply chain of one of the supermarkets, like was mentioned earlier, Tesco, asking their suppliers to do some carbon accounting for their businesses. And as is the case with a lot of early stage obligation, it's at the moment fairly bare bones. So if the reason that you're doing carbon accounting is for obligation, then at the moment scopes are set into 1 and 2. So I guess I should give some background on what scoping means under the Greenhouse Gas Protocol and sort of carbon accounting. So your scopes are split into three. Your first is all of your direct emissions from all sources. So that's predominantly in horticulture, you're talking about burning natural gas or some other kind of combustion fuel, whether that's biomass or whatever. And then any sort of direct emissions from the nitrogen, any agrochemicals that you're putting into the glasshouse. And then your scope two is your indirect emissions from energy. So this is predominantly, again, going to be any electricity that you import from the grid. Although if you are part of a heat network or something similar, then it's also any direct heat or steam that you're importing from another business. And then finally, your scope three is sort of all other emissions. So this is where you capture all of the upstream and downstream emissions, stuff that's associated with the production of the pots that you're using, any packaging. A large part of it, especially for horticulture, is water. So the water that you import and then your wastewater afterwards. So those are the scopes. Generally, what I've seen is that the obligation schemes are focusing on scopes one and two, partially because they're the sort of easiest to calculate. That data is normally fairly readily available, and they're, you know, reasonably simple to do those calculations. And then the other part of it is how much of your carbon account is able to be affected by, you know, your decisions. So if you have got a large amount of natural gas that you're burning, then you can look at increasing your energy efficiency of the buildings or increasing the efficiency of your boilers or even switching to a different fuel or a different heating method like a ground source heat pump or something, which will, you know, significantly reduce your those emissions. Whereas if you look at your scope three emissions, something like your packaging or something like that, the pots that you're growing in, those, although they can be affected by, you know, your decisions, it's there's often less of an effect of what your business can affect how the business that you're buying your pots from is running. So scopes one and two are a really good place to start.
Thank you, Erin. So Georgia touched on some of the currently available tools for calculating carbon footprint and which ones may or may not have been suitable for Neem Lee. We can agree that there's no ideal candidate at the moment for horticulture, but in your opinion, in the current climate, which one is most suitable for horticultural businesses to start using?
Yeah, so like Georgia mentioned, there isn't really a perfect calculator in general, but especially for horticulture. The one that she did mention earlier, the Farm Carbon Cutting Toolkit, is one of the ones that is fairly good. It calculates a whole farm footprint or calculation. So that can be useful to sort of calculate all activities that are going on and give you sort of one final number for your business. Another one that is also good I can recommend is the Cool Farm tool. So that will give you a product specific carbon footprint. So that will be, you know, if you're growing multiple different crops or even comparing between different years of the same crop, then you can get a figure that will give you a metric of this is how much carbon equivalent per kilo of produce that you're making. And then finally, the last tool is AgriCalc. So it's a little bit more complicated than the other two. It requires a bit more data and a bit more sort of completeness of your data to put in. But it's, yeah, again, it's one of the ones that's fairly comprehensive, and it can do either a product specific or a whole farm calculation depending on what it is that you want. And it's sort of probably the most flexible because it requires so much data. You can really tailor your calculation. Although something to note with horticulture is that it is a bit different from traditional agriculture in terms of how you calculate the carbon emissions, specifically around nitrogen emissions from fertilizer usage, but also with CHP is one of the parts that are a bit sticky with some of the calculators. So although you can use any of them, you might have to sort of fiddle the data a little bit so that it works in the calculator. I know that specifically the Cool Farm tool, it requires you to put in an amount, like a growing area, and then some soil characteristics. Clearly, you're not using soil, so there aren't any soil characteristics to add, and then it won't let you go any further with the calculation until you've put those in. So there are some areas where you have to sort of force the calculators through, but if you're sort of comfortable with them, if you read into the backend calculations a little bit and you sort of look at how it is they work, you can make your data fit to use one of them.
I think it's important to add something else, another dimension into here, and that is there's a lot of people searching for the perfect calculator, the ideal blend of robust data and ease of use, which I think is almost a utopian solution. If it's going to be robust and contain everything that all attributes, then it's unlikely to be easy to use. But I think that can also be a bit of a distraction against the main aim. And the main aim here is to be reducing carbon emissions. And we could be losing precious time in trying to find a perfect calculator solution when actually maybe an imperfect calculation, but that gives you some answers, some baseline to work on, to allow you to then to start to make those business decisions that Rebecca was talking about earlier, and to be able to look back and see how far you've come to track your progress. Rebecca, is that true of where you're at it with Neemly?
Yeah, definitely, John. I would agree with that. So I think both George and I would say that this process, it definitely hasn't been easy by any stretch. Like we've all discussed, there's no perfect tool out there, and there probably never will be, I think. A sort of one size fits all tool for any type of business. Now, for us, I think it's exactly as you said. We're in 2021 now. When we started this project, it was 2020. 2035 is, which is when Tesco have set for net zero. That's not that far away when you think about all of the changes that for some businesses need to be put in place. So for us, it was very much, even if we are, 70, 80% of the way there for the next 2, 3, 4 years, every year that goes by, we can continue to refine the tool as we also make the changes internally. The decision for us was to make informed decisions. We needed to kind of base it on some data. So that's, we've decided to just kind of do what we can for now. Now we know what the requirements are, the gap thing like that. We can now kind of make changes each year as we go along, so that hopefully in 10, 15 years time, we're in a much, sort of better position to be able to make those informed decisions. But yeah, I completely agree. Having something is better than having nothing. So I think that having something that's not quite perfect still allows us to make certain decisions, especially if, we're focusing on scope 1 and 2, which are, as we know, some of the biggest areas and the most important areas.
Yeah, and if I could just add to that, as long as every stage in the process we are transparent and we're making it visible about what we are and aren't including at this current moment, what data is available for us, as long as we know that and we're making a note of it along the journey, then each year we can improve our data collection and we can improve our footprint, and we'll know what was included in the first carbon footprint and what was included in the last one as the data available improves.
Got something else to add actually on the scoping part of it. So like John said earlier, the best place to start is to have a calculation so that you can start sort of tackling your main areas and identify the sort of easy wins that you can make, which often does come under the sort of scopes 1 and 2. And the sort of ideal situation, especially as we get further towards a net zero goal, is that each business will have done at least their scope 1 and 2 calculations, which means that if you are getting your pots and your packaging from a supplier, the ideal situation is that supplier has done their scope 1 and 2 footprint already. So you'll have an emissions factor for this is how much GHGs have been emitted for this amount of pots that we buy. And there's an amount of who inherits that carbon emission, but that's a discussion for the people who set the obligation schemes.
So to refer back to something Georgia said about transparency, with the goal of net zero, more and more businesses are going to have to make plans to assess their carbon footprint, because as Rebecca said, some of those goals are not far off at all. Are there standards in place to ensure a level of consistency and transparency so that businesses are working to equal standards?
Yeah, I mean, like Georgia mentioned earlier, the predominant set of guidance for doing greenhouse gas calculations is the GHG protocol. So most of the calculators either use this. It's based on IPCC methodology. There are some sort of older guidance calculations that some calculators use some of those instead of IPCC or GHG protocol. But generally, that's one of the benefits of using a calculator, is that if you've done your carbon account or your carbon footprint based on the Cool Farm tool, for example, then it should be comparable with any other business that's done their carbon footprint with the Cool Farm tool. There is a bit of an issue when it comes to bespoke calculations, where you sort of decide where your boundaries are as a business for that calculation, which is not necessarily what another business has done. So when it comes to comparison and benchmarking, really the most helpful situation is where all you're comparing against is your own calculations from previous years. So you can ensure that you've got a sort of consistent methodology through it. Not that it's necessarily consistent calculation methods, but consistent boundaries on your calculations. So yeah, if you are using a tool, it is possible to compare with a neighboring farm who's using the same tool, but otherwise it's best to compare with yourself.
Can I just ask a question of Rebecca and Georgia then, in terms of the calculations that you've done thus far? I think our experience is that energy dominates a horticulture, and especially protected horticulture's greenhouse gas calculation or carbon footprint. Clearly, with the amount of biomass combustion that you have, and having already offset quite a lot of your fossil fuel-based combustion, you've made big steps towards reducing that element of it. What's the next biggest carbon emission that you're seeing and therefore needing to tackle?
Thanks, John. I'll let Georgia correct me if I'm wrong, but with where we are at the moment, I think, you know, in that data collation process, we can't really make that call. Hopefully in a month or so's time, we will be able to. But we're at that sort of pivotal moment where we're pulling in all the data into the tool to allow us to see that. So yeah, as you mentioned, you know, all of our sites are primarily heated by biomass. So whilst that isn't a perfect solution in any stretch, you know, the perfect solution would be no heat at all. You know, we need heat, and therefore, you know, we saw that as a much better alternative to, you know, more traditional heating methods such as oil in the industry. Obviously, you know, every element of the business, you know, especially at our Clay Lake site, we have made those changes already for sort of the areas that we could identify without the data, you know, for our business specifically. So the rainwater harvesting, so we use minimal amounts of mains water throughout the year to water our crops. So the majority, if not all of our crops, are primarily watered using recycled rainwater. And again, as you mentioned with the biomass, so this is why we're doing this piece of work, really, because we've exhausted the majority of the opportunities that we could see without having the data there. So it'll be really interesting, actually. I'm so excited to see what those next steps look like for our business. But at the moment, I think it's just a month or two too early to say.
Yeah, I'd echo what Rebecca said there. And I'd also build on what Erin had to say and say that we are trying to figure out the carbon emissions of the energy sources as they are. And then what I'm really keen to do for Neemly is figure out the emissions had they used a worse fuel source, so we can see the benefit of implementing those technologies. So they will have some idea of, say, using biomass over coal, what environmental benefits that's having for them. And then they can also see some of the fuels they're using at the moment, or the materials they're using, which ones are the worst offenders, and then which ones could they substitute or eliminate. And just having that data there will allow them to make those decisions.
And is the strategy from a Neemly perspective like what I would expect, which is to reduce first and then consider offset actions later? Is that sort of the ultimate aim here, Rebecca?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we just want to kind of follow that process through, going with reduction and elimination first, and then looking to where we can substitute different methods, and then, you know, looking to offset as a last option, really. Equally, that said, we've got a huge amount of space outside of the front of our clay lake site, which from a biodiversity perspective, you know, we will want to plant a lot of trees there as well, which will help. But the main aim there is to really just pretty up the site, and the carbon offsetting is a bonus, because obviously reduction, elimination and substitution are kind of the three areas that we want to focus on, we can, to start with. So yeah, I think in the next couple of months we should have a really clear view on the areas we need to focus on, and then we can start to look at different options in each of those areas.
We've talked in some detail about the work you're doing at Neem Lee, and clearly your feelings are that it's been a really beneficial exercise. So would you recommend this approach to other grow businesses, Rebecca?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, the hope is in the next year or two, once we've had the opportunity to prove that this system works for us as a business, the hope is that we can share this methodology with other horti businesses. For us, it's about kind of making positive change to the industry as well as the planet as a whole. So yeah, it's been a, you know, a massively beneficial exercise for us, obviously in a couple of months time, hopefully even more so, because we will be able to identify those areas we can sort of eliminate, reduce, substitute, and which areas need to be the key focus for us as a business as we continue to grow. But yeah, the hope is that we will be able to share this knowledge that we've gained, and the amazing work that Georgia has done, with the wider industry, in the hope that it can benefit other businesses as well.
Really great to hear that you've got that ethos, and that you're going down the route of transparency with the benefit of the wider industry also in mind.
Quite often, and it's a sad reflection really, but quite often the carbon decision isn't the economic decision. The carbon mitigation actions, the emissions reductions actions, tend not to give economic return like a normal sort of commercial business decision might. How do you balance that at Neem Lee to make sure that you continue to operate as a well-functioning, well-practicing business?
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there, John, and it is totally true. A lot of the investment that we've made thus far, biomass boilers undoubtedly are more expensive than oil boilers. But for us, I guess it's a longer term view. You know, we see ourselves as hopefully being a big player in the horti industry for years to come. So for us, that investment is worthwhile. I think there's obviously the complexity of the full supply chain. So our suppliers, as they begin to make changes, you know, positive changes to the environment, to their carbon footprint, that will undoubtedly have a knock-on impact on cost. Likewise, as we make those changes in our business, that also has a knock-on impact on cost to our customers. Now, we've done our absolute best to this point to absorb that as much as possible. We've seen it as our role to do that. However, I think as journey towards net zero in, you know, the sort of the global level becomes, you know, so important and so sort of front of mind for a lot of businesses, if not all, I think that there's going to need to be a growing acceptance that there will be cost increases, and that sort of, you know, funnels right down to the consumer level. But I think that consumers are beginning to understand it. They're starting to see the importance of net zero and the importance of businesses becoming more sustainable to protect and save the planet. So hopefully, you know, as we progress through this decade, that those conversations and those increases in prices will naturally become a little bit easier. But yeah, at this point in time with where we are, the cost aspect does have, certainly in kind of the full supply chain, it does have a bit of an impact. But for us as a business, we're trying to see the bigger picture, in terms of, you know, the future years to come, the planet, kind of doing what we can to support those decisions economically.
So to round off the podcast, John and Erin, do you have any thoughts on how we can best support growers to take these steps towards the net zero target in their businesses?
I think from my perspective, we talked about this as we've gone through, it's important that we highlight the immediate actions people can take, and let's not get distracted by trying to come up with a perfect solution. Let's come up with some numbers for individual businesses that we can then use to start making business decisions around, about how we go about reducing those carbon emissions. Clearly, in protected horticulture, energy is a really big impact in carbon emissions terms. And as the GrowSave work, as NFU Energy, and the work that we've done for many, many years, actions to reduce energy consumption, be more energy efficient, substitute your energy consumptions with alternative forms, be them biomass burning, be them heat pumps, or whatever else might come along down the line in years to come, will start to become of real strategic importance in that carbon emissions reduction strategy for individual businesses. So let's think about those practical actions, and from my point of view, let's get started doing things, because I think, as Rebecca so eloquently put it, it's not very long away now. You know, 2035, 2040, 2050 are going to come up very, very quickly. Erin, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I just sort of echo what John said there. It's the most important thing you can do is make a start, really, and focus on the large wins or the quick wins that you can make. Something that is very easy to quantify is the amount of energy you're using. You know, you've got the fuel, you've got electricity, and depending on what your sort of, whether it's a lit or an unlit operation, whether or not your where your heat source is coming from, it's going to change whether it's electricity or whether it's some kind of combustion fuel that's your main energy use. But those are areas that are quite easy to make differences in. And also something to note about electricity. It's interesting to sort of keep an eye on the emissions factors for grid electricity as the renewables mix increases, which it has been doing for quite a while now, the emissions factor comes down. So it could get to a point where you can start looking at your operation and think that it may be worth switching to a way of producing heat through electricity, such as a heat pump, rather than through combustion fuels, because of not only the price, but the carbon might start to be lower for delivering that through electricity instead.
Thank you so much to John, Erin, Rebecca and Georgia for a really interesting discussion about moving towards net zero in horticultural production. It's been really valuable. If you'd like more information on this subject, please do get in touch with us or watch our recent webinar, Taking Steps Towards Net Zero. There is also a plethora of information around energy management and improving efficiencies on the AHDB GrowSave pages, so please also have a look at those. Thank you.